the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Carl Thomas can't be with us this week. He's on a cruise ship, but thankfully it's not the one with the hantavirus. Larry Donnelly is joining Marion McKeown. But Marion, can I start with you by asking how Donald Trump's ceasefire with the Iranians is holding up?
Well, I hope Cal isn't anywhere near the Strait of Hormuz either, because I'm not sure that this is holding up too well at all, because this whole thing is just bizarre. They're saying now that there have been a number of hostile acts, shall we say, by the Iranians, and the Pentagon is saying that they're below the threshold of restarting war. I mean, they've fired on commercial vessels, they've seized ships, they've apparently fired on attacked US military forces about 10 times since the ceasefire began. So it begs the question, what is the threshold for restarting war? I mean, it's clear what's going on here. The Iranians are deliberately, I think, poking the bear. They know that the US military stockpile is so depleted, they don't want to go back to dropping bombs and doing all that kind of thing again, because it's not having any discernible effect at this point. The military mission has probably done as much as it's going to achieve. And so America is just in this, the worst of all situations at the moment, with this sort of quagmire that, you know, if they start bombing again, they can't really afford to lose weapons or use them at the rate they were using them at, and munitions. And if they don't, they're being made to look like a bit of a laughing stock.
Don't be saying that. Trump doesn't like that, particularly if Germans say that. Before we get to the issue of Germany and Poland and NATO, Larry, what's your interpretation of what's going on? Because as well, only last Friday, Trump's people told Congress, oh, we're not at war at all, so don't be saying we are, because it would be illegal, wouldn't it, for them to be at war without congressional approval after 60 days?
Yeah, we've gone past this 60-day mark, and it should be said that presidents on both sides of the aisle have grappled with this in the past, and to me, it's an abnegation of responsibility by the United States Congress, which ultimately does have the power, the sole power, to declare war, to authorize war, but they've ceded responsibility on this and a number of other fronts. Where this is headed is very hard to discern, because while we supposedly, as Marion outlines, have a ceasefire, it doesn't look like much of one to me. And when you compare the rhetoric of on both sides, I think Trump has said that, you know, look, he's prepared to blow Iran off the face of the planet recently. The Iranian speaker has said that we have only begun, we have not even begun to fight. It's very hard to know where this goes. And it's really, I suppose, who's going to blink first. And to that point, here's where Iran really has an advantage over America. You know, I think Westerners all too often assume that people in places like Iran operate on the same basis that they do. They fundamentally do not. This is a battle with what they see as one of the great Satans, and they are willing to go as long as it takes. And they don't operate by the same, I suppose, concerns or constraints that arguably constrain Western countries, and in particular, Donald Trump, with the midterms looming ahead.
Well, let's get clarity, if that's what he offers, from the Secretary of Defense, now known as Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, who was asked at a press conference this morning if the ceasefire was over.
No, the ceasefire is not over. Ultimately, this is a separate and distinct project, and we expected there would be some churn at the beginning, which happened. And we said we would defend and defend aggressively, and we absolutely have. Iran knows that. And ultimately, the president's going to make a decision whether anything were to escalate into a violation of a ceasefire. But certainly, we would urge Iran to be prudent in the actions that they take to keep that underneath this threshold. This is about the straits. This is about freedom of navigation. This is about international waterways. This is about free flow of commerce, all the things that happened before, and only Iran is contesting. So right now, the ceasefire certainly holds, but we're going to be watching very, very closely.
Which sort of translates, Marion, is please don't make this any worse for us. So but could it be that what will happen eventually is that Trump will come away boasting about getting some sort of deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, and then will completely forget about the initial thing of getting the nuclear weapons or the processing material out of Iran?
Yeah, you know, he's painted himself into such a corner here because, as Larry alluded to there, the Iranians aren't looking at elections in November, or indeed at all. If they, I mean, they don't operate under the same constraints. Petrol in America has gone up to $4.48 a gallon. And believe me, coming into the holiday season and the Labor Day weekend and all of that, you know, it's just that's one thing that drives Americans nuts. So I think Trump's in a really bad position here. He is never going to get anything as good as the Obama, as he calls it, nuclear deal that he tore up in 2018. If he got back to that, if he even got back to that, that would be a huge victory for him. But he thought, I don't know how he thought he could do this. He was clearly, well, he was ill-advised, but he doesn't listen probably anyway. But he's in a situation now where I don't see how, as you say, even if they call this a draw and they reopen the strait, well, the strait was open before he started all this anyway, and then what happens with the nuclear stuff? You know what I mean? It's, I don't see how he can ever declare a victory in this that anybody is going to believe. He'll declare it anyway, but nothing that I think would amount to anything that is remotely credible.
I'm sure the MAGA lot would support him no matter what. But Carl, what about the situation now with NATO? Because we had last week, the Iranian foreign minister heads off for a meeting with Vladimir Putin in Moscow. Putin has a 90-minute meeting on the phone with Trump. And then because we hear that the German Chancellor Merz has made, well, comments that Trump regarded as inflammatory about how Iran was basically humiliating the United States in negotiations, Trump orders the withdrawal of 5,000 US troops from Germany. Is that something that should be regarded seriously?
I'll take being called Cal as a compliment, but the
sorry, Larry.
but you know, I mean, look, this is personal. We know how Trump operates. He takes every thing personally and as an affront. I do think there's another element at play here. Look, Trump has to know deep down, no matter how much he might deny it publicly, that he has made a colossal mistake in Iran, and he has forfeited one of his best political advantages, was that he wasn't going to engage and forever war, America first, and all that business. I think there is a segment of his base and a segment of America which will see this idea of, you know, bringing troops out of Germany and say, oh, he's bringing people home, and he can play to that sort of, you know, Europe is weak, you know, Europe freeloads on top of us, that he can get a little bit of a political win out of that. Now, of course, that totally ignores the fact that America has military around Europe and around the world because it benefits itself. But I think there's an element of that sort of trying to play a little bit of defense on the America First front with respect to that, as well as, again, this idea that he's offended personally and he's going to be petty about it. And we know that's how he's conducted business since he's been president.
And meanwhile, he keeps going after the Pope. This idea that the Pope is endangering a lot of Catholics is wrapped up in his claim that somehow the Pope is in favour of Iran having nuclear weapons. Who remembers the Pope, Pope Leo, saying that?
Yeah, it's pure nonsense. And you know, I think, not to put words in the Pope's mouth, but I think the Pope would prefer if no country had nuclear weapons. I think that's the ultimate goal here. But Trump has made a cardinal sin. Again, it's another unforced error. Don't forget how well he did with Catholics, and the Catholic vote is hugely important in the United States. All he is doing by this protracted war of words with the Pope is alienating people who he and who Republicans are going to very badly need on side in November. Now, a lot of those Catholics are so disenchanted with the Democratic Party that they wouldn't countenance voting for a Democrat. But what they might do is vote for neither side, because they will not be best pleased with the way that this president has continually targeted the Pope. I mean, he's called him weak, all sorts of other really nasty things. And one thing you could count on with U.S. presidents on both sides of the aisle. And again, neither party's ideology nicely fits the Catholic Church's teaching, because the Catholic Church's teaching is eternal. It's not dependent on lots of things that Republicans, Democrats format their policies around. One thing they had in common was that they would not get into a war or criticize in any way the Pope. Yet this president, again, showing how unprecedented his tenure has been, seems to relish it at some level. And the bottom line here politically is it's so contrary to his self-interest that it boggles the mind.
Okay, let's move on, Marion, and tell me a little bit more about this case against James Comey, the former head of the FBI, the 8647 case, which it seems now, according to the acting US Attorney General Todd Blanche, is based on more than seashells.
You know, this is, I am no fan of James Comey's, but this is the most outrageous abuse of power and abuse of justice. And you know what this is going to be in 3 years' time? I guarantee you, James Comey, and I don't think he will lose this case for a second. I don't know if it'll even get to court. He is going to bring a massive malicious prosecution lawsuit against the Department of Justice correctly. And he is going to get millions and millions of dollars in compensation because there is no basis for this. What they are doing here is, and I think everybody probably knows that there's an old restaurant slang term that says, you know, when something is no longer available in a kitchen or if it's off the menu or it's gone off or whatever, you 86 it. So you don't let people order it anymore. So there were seashells on a beach, which he says he didn't organise, in the shape of 8647. He posts it. Trump goes, oh, that's a mob term. That means kill me, whatever the hell. It's apparently never been used by any mob term in any movie that Trump ever referenced. It's a restaurant term. So now Todd Blanche went on TV and embarrassed himself. And, you know, Todd Blanche and James Comey were colleagues in the New York and the Southern District of New York. Comey was a bit ahead of him, but they both worked in the same place. They were both sort of serious prosecutors. And for him to be doing this is just pathetic because he wants to presumably get the Attorney General's job on a permanent basis rather than an acting basis. It cannot succeed. He's saying, oh, well, you don't know the whole story. Does he really expect Americans to believe the former director of the FBI was seriously threatening the life of a US president? I mean, it's ludicrous. So as I say, they brought an indictment against him last year. They tried to claim that he lied to Congress or whatever. There was some trumped up charge that was thrown out on the basis that Trump hadn't even got a lawfully appointed prosecutor, Lindsay Halligan, I think at the time she was a real estate lawyer, to prosecute the case. So the whole thing is just embarrassing, but it's also deeply shameful for the Department of Justice to be doing something like this.
There was a great piece by Keith Duggan in the Irish Times today about fears of a new era of black voter suppression amidst this rush to remap the US voting districts. Larry, how serious an issue is this? Is there a look that there's major gerrymandering underway by the Trump lot to try and keep him and his people in power?
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I zooming out a little bit, I have very mixed feelings about this Supreme Court decision in the sense that, look, we all know the history of the American South, the way that African Americans' votes were suppressed for a long time. But at the same time, you look at the maps there and you say, look, there is an awful lot of gerrymandering here, you know, whatever way you want to look at it, which I don't think is good. And I think Marion referred to it recently as sort of a race to the bottom between the two parties. And next to the role of money in American politics, the biggest problem here is the way the congressional districts are gerrymandered around the United States. It's absolutely appalling. And the Supreme Court bizarrely has said that while racial gerrymandering is not acceptable, partisan gerrymandering is acceptable. And that to me is absolutely bonkers. So now we have a reality where in the coming months, now we see everyone's pulling out the stops at the very last minute, trying to redraw maps and everything else in a nakedly partisan fashion. And this is absolutely horrendous. It's an indictment of American democracy. Remember, these are going to be decided upon by courts where lots of the judges are directly elected, where they are partisan people, where these decisions aren't being made on the law, they're being made on politics. It's a damning indictment of the American system. And if there was, again, money is there, we all know it's a huge problem, but the gerrymandering of districts in the United States is absolutely appalling. And there's fault to go around on both sides. Even if you look, for instance, at New England, where about 35 to 40% of the people vote Republican, there's only one member of the United States Congress who is a Republican. So it happens both sides, both directions. They're all equally to blame, and it's a disgrace.
But meanwhile, Trump is also, Larry, heading off to various primaries for the midterms, looking to put his own people into Republican positions to get rid of dissent within his own party. How well will that go for him?
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting, Matt. The one that I'm watching most carefully is Thomas Massey, a Republican congressman from Kentucky. He would be a very, very conservative individual, America First, libertarian, but he has crossed swords with Donald Trump, and there is a Trump-sponsored candidate running against him in the primary. I adverted to Money a minute ago. They've already spent $15 million in ads for a congressional seat, which is absolutely extraordinary. Again, another indictment of politics in the United States. It will be very interesting to see if Massey is able to hold on to his seat. And one of the things he's been saying is that, implying at least, is that, look, there's lots of other Republicans just like me who have had enough of Trump, who won't take him on because of the power he exerts still at the grassroots level. It'll be interesting to see if Massey survives the primary. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the aftermath, again, in the context of midterms, where Republicans will be doing everything they can to save their own butts.
So, Marion, was the Jeff Bezos-sponsored Met Gala as trashy as his wedding in Venice?
Oh, I don't know. You know what? No, because there were some extraordinary outfits there. But the backlash, my goodness. You know, I remember when this gala, when I was living in New York, and we'd always try and get into the Stanhope for cocktails beforehand, because clearly none of us were paying 100 grand for a ticket, or I think it was 50 or 75 grand then. And you have to be even invited to buy the ticket. You can't even buy it if you have 100 grand. But the backlash against Bezos and Lauren Sanchez, his wife, basically kind of throwing down 10 million to take this over. And I think that it's a real measure of the sort of revulsion people are feeling at these billionaire types, these tech bros like him and Elon Musk and all that, that they just go around with our money and they slap it down everywhere and they taint all of these things that used to belong to a city. Now, the Met Ball was always pretty elite, but there was it had a very creative energy where it attracted all kinds of people and designers, and, you know, they still turned up, but just that it's suddenly the Bezos Ball. And I have to say, some of the protests were very creative. They had these big screens beamed on to Bezos's penthouse in New York, interviewing workers in Amazon about the appalling conditions that they work under. And they had, you know, empty plastic bottles placed all around New York in containers out near the area, saying that people could pee in the bottles if they needed to, because that was an allusion again to the way Amazon workers allegedly have to operate. They aren't given time off for bathroom breaks. They apparently also put 500 bottles within the Met that looked like they were half full of pee, but they weren't. It was fake, hopefully. I think that this was all kind of funny protest stuff, but there was a real backlash. And I think, you know, against Anna Wintour in particular, that she chose, because she was so elitist, she wouldn't let the Kardashians near the place for years and years and years, and so sniffy about who was allowed to take part in this and who wasn't. And suddenly, if you've got enough money, you can pay to play. And I think New Yorkers really did resent that.
All right, we will leave it there. Thank you very much, Marion McKeown and Larry Donnelly, for being with us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.